This is
Everything Energy,
produced by the International Energy Agency.
Welcome back to Everything Energy, a podcast created by the International Energy Agency that looks at current energy issues as well as the future of the global energy system. I'm Tanya Dihan, and earlier this week, my co-host Jad Mawad was at IEA headquarters for the launch of our Renewables 2020 report. He caught up with Hami Bahar, Senior Analyst in Renewable Energy Markets and Policy, and lead author of this report, to discuss a few key elements of the analysis, including solar's rise to the top of electricity generation and the importance of renewables in sustainable recovery plans. This year, for the first time, you can read the whole report and explore its data on our website at iea.org.
Hami, thanks for joining us. So this year, 2020, is going to be the worst year for energy demand. It's even worse, and we've talked about this before at the IEA. We've talked about this before on the podcast. This year is going to be even worse in terms of demand drop than the period that followed the financial crisis a decade ago. If you put this in perspective for our listeners, the drop we're seeing this year is 7 times bigger than the drop in demand we've seen a decade ago. But there's a major change this time, and a bright spot in the energy sector, which we're going to talk about, and that is renewables. The renewable sector, which has adapted very, very rapidly to the challenge of the pandemic. So, Hami, how do you explain the resilience of the renewable sector, which seems to defy the pandemic? And would you go as far as to say as the renewable sector is immune to COVID?
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, Jad, in this podcast. Renewables are definitely resilient. Our analysis proves that, and they are actually close to be immune to the crisis. Why I'm saying this? Because of the electricity contribution of renewables. While global energy demand will decline by 5% this year due to the demand shock that we are seeing in our daily lives, but renewable electricity generation will increase by 7%, totally the opposite direction. But obviously, the story is not over. We need to look at renewables in multiple sectors. Some sectors are more resilient than the others or more hit than the others. In this case, renewables in transport sector is hit very hard. Actually, with the demand, we see a decline in biofuels, significant that we haven't seen for 2 decades. And for renewable heat, we will see also decline basically on bioenergy consumption in industry.
Okay, so we'll unpack those. We'll get to transport in a minute. We'll get to heat. But we want to start with the power sector, because this is where we're seeing these big headline numbers go up. And obviously renewables is used in beyond the power sector, but that's also one of the challenges, I guess, for renewables. So in those areas where it is being used, it's being used a lot more. And last month, we released the World Energy Outlook, which kind of crowned solar as the king. Long live the king, I guess, because here in your report, you're really validating the outlook for 2020 and for the next few years. So walk us through a little bit about kind of what is this great solar story?
Of course. So in 2020, first of all, we will see, despite all these disruptions, crisis, the supply chain problems, we will see renewable capacity additions to increase despite the crisis. So I would like to emphasize this. And the majority is solar. And the solar's resilience, especially in the large-scale projects, is proven in almost every part of the world where in United States, in China, after a few hiccups, developers really increased the construction activity to complete the projects. And it is important to mention that solar accounts for now 50% of all increase in global electricity capacity, which means an impressive number. And our analysis shows that this number will not stay the same, will not decline, but will just increase. And solar will be even continue to carry its crown in the coming 5 years. And if we will see which we will come later, Jad, about the policy improvements, we can see actually much faster growth of solar. And we will see that, I think, in the next coming months and years, how the policies work.
Yeah, definitely. We do want to talk about policies, but let's talk about what's driving this growth in solar right now. So obviously, cost declines. And here you're talking about solar, all types of solar technologies. Maybe give us a few kind of details here.
Of course. So first of all, solar costs continue to decline in 2020, and they will continue to decline in the coming 5 years. Solar right now in almost all parts of the world is the cheapest way of producing electricity. And in some parts of the world, recent prices show that it's actually competitive with existing fossil fuel generation that we're already generating. So this is also an important thing. In India, for instance, in some states, this already happened last year and the year before. So we are seeing a big shift of cost, which is one thing. The second thing is the utility scale projects, which are large, which have economies of scale. And then we see that developers in this crisis situation are moving more to bigger and bigger projects in order to take advantage of economies of scale. But one segment of solar which gets hit relatively is the rooftop PV. Why rooftop PV is fit, is hit is a quite easy explanation. If we can do it in one sentence, is that these are small investors. In the economic crisis, their priorities change. Obviously, they turn into a survival mode, and investing in a solar rooftop, even though it's economically available, it may not mean that they have cash available to invest. So that is the problem that we see, but we don't expect this to take too long.
So this is very much cyclical. That will pick up in your forecast.
Exactly. Definitely, they will pick up. It's a hiccup, I will say, in the short term, because even for the rooftop small projects, in most parts of the world, if you install them, you make money, which is very simple calculation. And we will see more and more policy frameworks supporting them too, because it's democratization of energy.
Definitely. So we'll get back to a bit of the competitiveness of solar. But before we get into that, solar and wind have been driving this renewables growth. So let's not forget about wind. Here too, you foresee a spectacular increase in wind, with also their cost declining by 40% in the next 5 years. So where's this appetite coming from?
Wind sector is driven mostly by this year two important factors. And there's a lot of a backlog of projects that needs to be completed by 2020 due to policy deadlines. Previously, when we updated this forecast in May, we saw really important supply chain disruptions in wind sector. But when we look at after May, we saw that the wind industry immediately adapted to the new normal conditions, both supply chain and construction activity, and then it picked up quite fast. So that's why we expect 2020 wind capacity additions to increase actually significantly compared to last year, both offshore and onshore, and will make it an important jump even after 2020 in 2021, which is a critical proof of the resilience of the sector.
Right. And so, in fact, there's 2020, which is a very complicated year, 2021, which is the proof in the pudding really here. But really, you're also issuing a five-year forecast in a very difficult environment. So it's very bold analysis. What's remarkable here is that one of the biggest headline findings you have is what that looks like in 5 years, and the fact that renewables account for 90% of total power capacity growth, right? So explain to us what that really means, because this is not the norm here in the market.
Yes. So actually, it's higher than 90% if you take into account the whole year. So what's going to happen? We look at every year, we install new plants, they start generating. Some of them get out of the system. They leave the electric system because they are too old. We look at the net increase in the power system, which means from 2019 to 2025 in this case, we will see the net increase. And in this case, we see renewables accounting for slightly higher than 90% of the growth. Which means the rest is oil, gas, not that much oil, but gas and a little bit coal and so on and so forth. This increase is a big shift compared to historical levels, obviously. And our viewers or readers are confused about this capacity versus generation. We talk about capacity here, and we get criticism that why don't you talk about generation, because that's the most important thing. Indeed, in the next 5 years, renewables will account for 100% of the generation increase on top of the capacity. Because, first of all, is the 2020 is a demand shock. The demand will decline, then it will pick up slowly according to IEA expectations. But renewables will continue to grow significantly and will make up for the full increase of the generation. So it's important, Jad, to make this differentiation to our customers, capacity versus generation. But this year is actually both about 90%. So we shouldn't be confused anymore.
Exactly. So capacity is what can be generated, essentially.
Exactly.
Is the investment in what then can be generated.
Exactly.
So before we get to where the growth comes in, and I think we want to get a little bit into sort of India, the China story, and what's next, I think there's another really interesting finding here, which, again, in the grand scheme of things, is just phenomenal. So if we go back to the early 1950s, we find that coal had the highest share in electricity generation. So the power that you get comes from coal, most of it. But before 2025, you're saying now that renewables will overtake coal as the number one source of power of electricity generation. And that's pretty stunning. This is another one of those historic moments. That's here to stay, right?
So that's definitely here to stay. Actually, it can even be earlier if the renewables accelerate faster, which is a possibility in our accelerated case. Depends on the government policy. So this landmark moment, as we say, is going to happen somewhere between 24 and 25. It's quite important because it's since 1950s that for the first time coal will lose to become the champion of electricity to renewables. Renewables will become the largest source of global electricity generation by providing one-third of the full system. And solar is the king, but hydro is the queen here in this case, because hydro will still provide the majority of this electricity that is coming from renewables. Solar PV leading the growth. We refer to it as a king. But hydro and wind shouldn't be forgotten, because they will provide a lot of electricity of this 33% when you combine both and including solar. And it's an important landmark, and I do not think it will change or reverse over time. All our long-term scenarios show beyond this report that this will continue.
Okay, give us a bit of a sense of where this growth is going to come from next year. So European Union, India, China.
Sure. Next year, we will see renewable capacity increase growing by 4%. So new additions, as we mentioned. And there are two drivers to this. In this case, it's China and the United States. Why? Because there are policy deadlines that are coming to an end by the end of 2020, which were expiring, then extended in the United States a little bit for one more year, but it had a big impact of the deployment. So we will see that boost. And also in China, China decided in 2019 to phase out all renewable subsidies. So there's a big push of developers to get those subsidies. This is for 2020. 2021 is a different story, where US and China remain strong, but the increase is coming from mostly India. A big jump on Indian, especially solar PV growth. India mentioned in the launch presentation, maybe it's important to mention here, that auctioned record level of solar PV capacity this year, which will be commissioned in the coming years, 2021 included. And also European Union, we see an important shift after the 2030 targets and policies in the European Union. Countries are putting more efforts for the plan to reach new 2030 targets. And we see Spain, France, Germany pushing new capacity. And we will see a big jump in 2021 and beyond in the European Union because of the ambitious targets.
So you mentioned in the report also that beyond that, there's new policy certainty coming along. There's another big policy change, I think, that many people now expect with the result of the US election. So how does that impact or affect your forecast?
Sure. It's an important point, the policy, because in 2022, there is a lot of policy uncertainty that is coming in. Let me give you a few important ones. So, as I said, China subsidies are phasing out. A new plan will be announced in 2021, and we will don't know how this will affect 2022. The same thing for the US. US wind incentives are expiring this year and next. And 2021, we do not know what the new administration will implement. So it's a question mark. So we reflect these in the main case. And in the accelerated case, which we see about 25 to 30% more growth of renewables globally, we look at if those policy questions are addressed, how fast renewables could go. To answer that question, we go country by country and look at the different options. And just to give you an example about solar PV, in 2022, solar PV capacity additions could reach 150 gigawatts, which is 50%, almost 50% more than today in just 2 years in the accelerated case. And just 30% of this increase can come from China alone, because China plays a big role. And another one is coming from US, European Union. When you add these on top, you could see easily 140, 150 gigawatts coming online, which is an impressive growth in 2 years in the crisis mode. This is not impossible, but it requires policy attention and policy resolutions to problems, and which may be the case in the coming years. We will see.
So that's really interesting, because your accelerated case sees this big ramp up. At the same time, we are also seeing or hearing about policy, sort of more ambitious policies. I think there's a growing number of countries that have announced net zero targets for 2050. Clearly, that's going to have to ramp up over the years and decades. But is that the kind of policy shift that you would want to see for you to be able to kind of get on this accelerated case ramp?
This is the first step. These big policy goals over the long term, it's the first step, but it's not enough. Then we need to look at what policy frameworks are implemented to reach those targets, which we actually look at more in detail. Because, for instance, China announced a net zero target, but we do not know in the next 5 years what will be the incentive scheme for renewables. Japan announced a similar one. In a similar situation, feed-in tariff are changing towards a different policy. The details are being discussed. The same thing from the United States. New administration have very ambitious policies, but we don't know how they will be implemented. So we need more than the targets. Targets gives a positive indication, but we need more details to understand how those targets will be achieved. This is what we watch for, right, in every single market.
So with that goal in mind and those uncertainties you just mentioned, and at the same time, an economic crisis that we're still living through and a health crisis, obviously with the pandemic that is still ongoing, what does that mean for investor appetite for renewables? It seems like there is strong appetite, actually, and that's being confirmed despite these very, very difficult economic conditions.
Exactly. We looked at various resilience indicators this year. We like to talk about the resilience word. We say we proved the resilience, but we backed it up actually in the report. We looked at various indicators which can indicate that renewables are strong. And the first one was this performance of renewable companies in the stock markets. Why this is important? It can be speculative, of course, but it's important because it's important for their financial health. And it also gives an indication of the future perspectives of the investors, whether they want to. And when you put this in contrast with the performance of overall energy sector versus wind and solar and renewable developers, you see a huge disconnect. While since the beginning of the year, overall energy indicators show a 40 to 50% decline in the stock market performance, wind and solar doubled and more than doubled. So this is an impressive growth and shows exactly what investors are doing. On top of this, we also looked at every single renewable energy auction. Not only countries continue to do the auctions, it's one part. You can do an auction, but nobody applies if the investor confidence is not there. But in this case, we saw a record level auction capacity, which is received bids from the investors, which means we tried. Another important indicator is that offshore wind financing reached a record level in the first half of the year in the middle of the crisis. France, UK, Netherlands finance large offshore wind projects. We are talking about trillion level projects during the pandemic. So, which means it's positive.
Right, right. So this is all extremely encouraging for the renewable sector, clearly. And to reach these net zero targets, 2050, 2060, renewables is going to have to be a very, very large part of the answer. It's not the only one, efficiency being another big one, and other technologies for hard-to-abate sectors. But even in this period, it's not all rosy for renewables. And I think I'd like to address a couple of sectors here that you mentioned, one that is close to my heart on aviation. In heat and transport, there seems to have been some missed opportunities. The IEA talks a lot about a sustainable recovery, meaning that governments need to invest in an economic recovery that creates jobs, but also lays the ground for energy transition and investing in sustainable recoveries. Here, it seems like there's been a missed opportunity for biofuels particularly. So one example you mentioned is the airlines. Walk us through that example.
Of course. So the airline industry rightly so received a lot of attention because it's hit hardest from this crisis. We don't fly anymore. At least I don't.
Very few people do.
And then it seems like it's been since March, so it seems like it will continue. An airline demand which grew 50% over the last few years, the number of flights. When you look at now, it's completely the opposite direction. So, and airlines or air traffic is the one of the most difficult ones to decarbonize. Why? It's simple, because electrification of huge airplanes carrying hundreds of passengers with current technology is not really possible. So you have only fuels that can participate, and biofuels is one option. And biofuels have been used in airplanes over the last 3-4 years a lot in a small percentages, which is a good development, but it needs scale up. How do you achieve scale up? You create demand. How do you create demand? You use policies. So far, the policies for aviation has been extremely limited. And we thought that this will be an opportunity for governments to implement it. And we are asking ourselves whether we are in a missed opportunity, because we looked at in detail 30 airline bailouts, and only 4 of them put environmental conditions.
Meaning
which means
4 of them out of the 30 bailouts, 4 airlines were asked to
increase efficiency, change the routes, not to compete with train, short routes, not to compete with train routes, and so on and so forth. Fuel efficiency, ground efficiency, and so on and so forth.
Which airlines were those?
It's Air France, KLM, which is the same group, Austrian and Swiss. But interestingly, only 2 of them out of those had biofuels requirements, sustainable aviation fuels requirements. So that's it. In that sense, obviously, most of the money that is giving is not attached to any conditions, which is we are asking ourselves a question whether this is a missed opportunity. There's no judgment here because they are going through a very difficult time. But this may have been the opportunity to lower the cost of biofuels, advanced biofuels for aviation, because you create a huge demand suddenly. And we calculated if those 30 airlines put only 2% requirement of sustainable aviation fuels, the current demand will have increased by more than 50 times. I repeat, 50 times. And if something increases by 50 times in 2-3 years, which means you have scale, you have demand, you have cost declines, you have a better supply chain, you have more companies investing it, and so on and so forth. So as of today, we don't see that.
Right.
Maybe we will see.
Right. So another great sort of sense that recoveries, economic recovery, bailout plans should really include sustainable objectives, climate objectives, et cetera, because we can see a very large leverage effect, certainly, and meet many different goals at the same time. We could go on a lot, Hemi. This has been really fascinating. All of what you're talking about, good news for our listeners, is online, is on the IEA website. Renewables 2020 report this year is entirely free. It's entirely online. We have over 150 charts online, all of your analysis. And also for the first time this year, we had a very elaborate data dashboard that you can play with, looking at all kinds of metrics. Describe this a little bit for us, because that's new for the IEA.
Of course. So it's almost like a revolution, I will say, for our report, at least, because we used to publish classical PDFs. Now the full report is online. Not only full report is online, the whole data is online and easy to use. In these data visualization tool or dashboard that we have, you can explore our historical and forecast data on electricity, heat, and transport for more than 40 countries, which covers 90% of the market, and the regional aggregates if you want to. And you can pick country, technology, sector, whatever form of data you want, and then you can visualize it, which will be very good. We think people will take advantage of using this, which is very important to us, and it's for free, that you can explore this data. I think it will attract a lot of attention and people will use it more and more. It's an important for us to give this opportunity to people to play with the data.
Absolutely. Very much part of the IEA's digital transformation. And thanks for being a pioneer of that. So this was Renewables 2020, our forecast to 2025. And we were with Hemi Bahar, the main author of the report. Hemi, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your job. This was great.